Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations.
Good morning. Welcome. It's Monday, the 22nd, and I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill there one more day here. Rebecca, I was thinking about that line from Prince's Bride. Seemed appropriate today. Get used to disappointment. It's like Bill's not here. The Vikings blowing out in Philadelphia, although the Patriots won, so you know, New England fans pretty happy about that.
Yes, I'm glad somebody is.
So,
but you quoted the Princess Bride, so that's the best start to my morning
best start,
so far.
Yes, inconceivable. All right, here we are. I was actually reading something about hope today from Paul David Tripp, which I thought was probably important to hang on to. He says, hope is not a situation. Hope is not a location. Hope is not a possession. Hope is not an experience. Hope is more than an insight or truism. Hope is a person, and his name is Jesus. He comes to us and makes a commitment of hope, and behold, I am with you always to the end of the age. We'll hang on to hope today. Hope that your weekend went well and the day's starting well. We've got a great program lined up for you here this morning, including our regular visit with Patrick Olenese. He'll be joining us here in a few minutes. Ruth Kramer also from Mission Network News. We're going to talk a little bit about the persecuted church. You know, we have maybe down moments when our football team doesn't do well, but there are other bigger issues we're going to get to in a few minutes. So the 22nd, of course, today, the anniversary of that Supreme Court decision, the decision in the Roe versus Wade case in 1973. The justices ruled the Constitution allows women the right to an abortion. That was back in 1973. We'll talk about the March for Life and Sanctity of Life Sunday and some of those things a little bit later today as well. So I always like to look at the proverb a day, and I think last week I was off a day, but I'm on schedule today. Proverbs 22, actually, it's a great proverb, full of a number of verses. You probably know the one, Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way they should go when they're old and not depart from it. Proverbs 22:1 is a good one. Choose a good reputation over great riches, for being held in high esteem is better than having silver or gold. And then Proverbs 22:3, it reminded me of a prayer that Andy Stanley and his wife pray for their children. Proverbs 22:3 says, a prudent person foresees the danger ahead and takes precautions. The simpleton goes blindly on and suffers the consequences. So they call it, I think, the prudent prayer, and it goes something like this. Lord, help us to see trouble coming long before it gets here, and give us the wisdom to know what to do and the courage to do it. So that'll be our prayer for the day ahead. Lord, help us to see trouble coming long before it gets here, and give us the wisdom to know what to do and the courage to do it. I don't think there's any connection, but Patrick is coming up in a moment, so not trouble in any way. We're looking for, actually, he's one of those people with a good reputation, and he's held in high esteem by all of us here. And the Early Morning Late Show, more with Patrick Olenese coming up.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain,
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Well, here we are, 9 past the hour, the Early Morning Late Show, and each Monday morning, we check in with Patrick Olenese from prestigious West Des Moines. I was thinking, having a commentator on is one thing, but having a commentator that has immediate credibility, that's important. Of course, the minute you say prestigious West Des Moines, then it.
Right. Oh, thank you. I was wondering, where did the credibility come from? it's been bestowed upon me, unearned, just so you know.
Sure. So today it's our Monday morning session. It's faith, hope, and credibility today. That's what we're going for.
Is that what it is?
That's what it is. Yes. I know you were driving last night in a bit of winter weather, and I thought the windswept prairies sound idyllic until you're actually driving in them.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, entirely certain that I look back and I think when people did the, you know, the wagon train or whatever, you know, when they, the prairie trail, when, yeah. when they did covered wagons across the country, I go, you know, I don't think I would have survived that. No. I like to think I'm a pretty tough guy and, you know, it gets a little bit snowy out there, so I better pull over. I just, you know, this is bad.
Yes.
But it actually wasn't that. The previous Sunday was really bad.
Well, we're glad that you're back and checking in with us. And, of course, today is a day where we're, you know, if I guess some federal employees won't be going to work because, of course, the government is shut down. And
yes, not to be confused with the Minnesota Vikings defensive shutdown.
You were right. Sure.
Somebody must have confused the essential with the non-essential players.
Well, you know, I thought it's hard to get a miracle 2 weeks in a row. I think that's, I don't know, just as a general rule, I think that's probably true.
So. Yeah, I don't know where to set the expectations for that. But, you know, I have to say they gave it a good 4 minutes.
I think it was 4 minutes and 46 seconds. Was, you know, not that I was counting, but.
I got to listen to the game on the drive home.
Sure.
And I thought, well, you know, that's what a fantastic start. And,
yeah.
You know, I think that a precipitous downhill slide often starts with from a very lofty place.
Sure.
And that would be one touchdown.
Yes. Wow. It was,
so that was a bitter pill.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we do have football still to come here, Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. And I think I heard what NBC has, they've just about sold all the commercials, $500 million so far. In the bank.
Wow. That's well, I guess they're expecting a good turnout. I don't know, since the Super Bowl will be in Minneapolis, are they going to have to grease the light poles, you know, with Frisco like they did in Philadelphia? Which I think what a great idea. What more, you know, ominous threat to somebody than saying, if you want to celebrate after if we win and you climb that light pole, you're going to get heart disease. I just think that was a really smart idea. There's probably a class action suit coming in about 15 years when
sure.
a few hundred thousand people end up with high cholesterol.
Yes.
That should be a little bit rough. But what a great idea. Let's just grease the light poles.
Oh, well, I think we would grease them here so that people wouldn't stick their tongues on them. I think that would probably be more the issue here.
At least they're still used for Crisco, right?
Yes, yeah. Sure. Well, I think yes. Actually, they don't use Crisco. They use Spam here because it's Minnesota, so.
Oh, that's true.
Sure.
And probably equally as slippery, so to speak.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Although, you know, there was a period of time I used to put Spam, you know, slices of Spam on a George Foreman grill, and it was actually pretty tasty.
There's two things wrong with this story, right? That you had a George Foreman grill and you're putting Spam on it. So,
I thought there's got to be a way to make this stuff taste good and make this grill work, and
sure.
that was the magical combination. And the nice thing is each can of Spam came with a 10% off coupon with for an EKG.
Okay.
So I thought that
well,
clever, you know, marketing.
Marketing is important, no question about it. So speaking of marketing, I'm not sure how the Democrats are doing, marketing their current situation. I heard Mike Mulvaney, was the Treasury Secretary, is that right?
Boy, is he sharp.
Well, the press conference here on Friday, I guess it was. Let's give a listen to hear what he said.
Check back in with the governor. It still surprises me, and I've been through some of these before, that the Democrats in the Senate are opposing a bill that they don't oppose.
Thought that was so clever. It's got everything in it they want. They want more added, and so that's their complaint.
Yeah.
It's like, no, we want to put more in it. So I think maybe the Republicans should start taking stuff out of it little by little, saying, okay, well, here's something else you like. We'll take that out. And somebody's going to cry uncle at some point in time. I think it's fascinating that the Republicans are saying that the Democrats are playing politics with the issue. The Democrats are saying that the Republicans are playing politics with the issue, which just means that everybody's playing politics with the issue. I guess that's how this works.
Works is maybe a term used loosely, right? Because things don't seem to work very well, right? And of course, it all started right back in the House passed a budget bill back in September, and we're still on continuing resolutions and can't seem to get that put together.
Yeah, that's kind of how I do my New Year's thing. You know? January 1st, I go, let me just re-up that one that have yet to really kick in. That'll be my continuing resolution. I guess I run just like the Senate and the House. I don't know if they're going to get it done. They have to get it done, but it both sides are pretty stubborn. I do think that President Trump is a little bit more stubborn than most. And I don't think that, I know they're trying to say that, he changed the deal. But I think when he said, hey, I'll sign anything, that Lindsey Graham and Chuck Schumer said, this is great. Let's show up and we'll put the DACA in there. We'll put the Dreamers in there and we'll fund 10% of the wall that he wants and no end of chain migration. I mean, they basically didn't give him anything he wanted. And then they act surprised when he said, no deal. Going, this guy is kind of the art of the deal guy.
Yes.
You might want to show up with some of what he wants. You might want to.
We're going to talk more about the deals before us and a few of the other lead stories in the news today. We always talk headlines on Monday morning, Patrick, and we'll do more in just a couple of minutes here. It's 16 past the hour on the Early Morning Late Show. Eighteen past the hour, early on a Monday morning. It's the Early Morning Late Show, and I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold. One more day. That's the plan, anyway. And we're looking forward to the rest of the show and the rest of our conversation with Patrick Albanese, talking faith, hope, and credibility today. Well, maybe some clarity. Patrick joining us. I don't know if you saw this, Patrick, that Delta Airlines is cracking down on support animals taking aboard flights. Passengers who wish to take their support animals on a flight starting in March have to show proof of health and required animal vaccinations, etc. Airlines say they intend to keep untrained and sometimes aggressive animals from traveling without a kennel in the cabin. Customers have attempted to fly with some exotic animals, including comfort turkeys, possums, snakes, and spiders.
Wow. I think I might have been on a flight with a comfort armadillo, which I think...
Sure.
Not entirely certain how you pet an armadillo. Yeah. It turns into a ball. But, I think people are taking advantage, you might say. I actually know some people that have done that. They just say, well, I just relabel this as a comfort animal and that I can't fly without it. It's pretty soon it's going to look like one of those, those old-time movies where they, like an Indiana Jones movie. And he had to get on a bus, going to, old-time Bangladesh, and he said, everybody's got chickens and roosters.
I kind of feel like it's we used to call them kind of cattle cars back in the day anyway, and, maybe it's actually getting close to that.
Maybe that's coming back? Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. I had a friend that used to have a chicken was the finale to his magic act, and then he got to the point where he couldn't carry the chicken anymore because they said, well, that's agriculture. That's agriculture. Yeah. So he spent thousands and thousands of dollars to have a mechanical chicken made so he could still do his magic act and travel and not have a chicken put into quarantine for 6 weeks when he arrived, somewhere. And now, of course, he could have just said, this is my comfort chicken, the comfort chicken. Plus, I'm not happy with the food selection on this flight, so just in case.
It's
stuck on the tarmac for a couple of hours.
Like to have it fresh. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
And you may have heard of this, the serial stowaway arrested for the 10th time, 66-year-old. She's sneaking through security at Chicago Airport last week without a ticket. She's been doing this at least 8 times. 66 years old, Marilyn Hartman, her name is. I don't know about that.
I think a lot of people want to know her secret because it's. I don't necessarily want to stow away. I just want to avoid that security line.
Yeah, sure.
Because I thought that we just, the grandmas usually got the big, TSA check.
Yes.
Hey, by the way, is TSA with the government shutdown?
Oh, I wonder. Yes. So maybe it's Rebecca, do you know?
I believe that's considered an essential service because it's security.
Okay.
So none of that. I think the government shutdown in non-essential employees applies to about 17% of the government. Technically
speaking.
These
are like the Star Trek red shirt people, right?
Hopefully, Hopefully with a better track record and a longer lifespan, but sure. Yeah.
Captain Kirk addressing everybody with a red shirt, you're going, these guys are doomed. A non-essential employee, you have a red shirt on, you are targeted for destruction. Wow. Maybe we'll find out, just how lean the government can get. Maybe if this shutdown lasts for a couple of weeks, we'll say, you know what, these non-essential people, maybe we don't need them. I don't know.
Well, you would expect that there's probably a number of supporters of the president who pretty much elected him to do this very thing, actually, to shut the government down. So they maybe have quite a list of some agencies that they just don't start them back up again. I'm not sure.
Do you think anybody was surprised when they kind of got the notices, look, as far as we're concerned, you're non-essential? Or do you think people got the notice and said, they're on to me?
Sure.
It out.
It's happened finally, so.
It's happened finally. Yes. You know, you're kind of that Milton Wadhams in Office Space. It's just sort of tucked away in a corner there with your red swing line stapler. Yes. And, does anybody know what he does? He doesn't really do anything.
No,
but
so.
Here he is drawing a paycheck.
Yeah. Well, we hope that this week, in fact, the Senate, I think they were going to start at noon today, having another vote today to reopen the government. So they're trying to hammer out a way to get things going.
That starts at noon. That would mean that the name calling starts roughly at 1.
I think so. Yeah. So plan your news cycle according to that. So.
Accordingly. Yeah.
Hey, we got a couple of minutes left. I know, Patrick, you and I were chatting the other day about, exercise and, injury prone. And, we're kind of at that age where we like to do more. And every time we do, then we seem to, get set back and then don't feel like doing anything because, we got aches and pains.
Yeah. It doesn't feel like you're kind of going through life. You get to a certain point, you say, I think my check engine light is on. I think my check engine light is on. And I'm going to go into the doctor. He's going to say it's some kind of sensor, but we don't know exactly what it is. We're just going to start replacing things one by one until we hit the one that works.
Sure.
It's not that much different than your vehicle.
It's this is where the black electrician's tape over the dashboard comes in, I think.
Yeah. In fact, I actually had a check engine light episode. I was driving home from Minneapolis last Sunday. I stopped at a rest stop in Story City. When I got back in my car, the check engine light goes on, and I tried to bring it to the dealership, and they couldn't get to it, and they said, don't worry. You can drive with that check engine light on for quite some time. So I drive on it for a week. I drive back up to Minneapolis. I'm driving back from Minneapolis last night, a full week later. I stop at the same rest stop in Story City. When I get in my car, the check engine light went off. I wish I were kidding. It's a complete mystery. I go, what is it about this rest stop? Turned on the light, turned off the light a week later. How am I up? Yes.
Is that the Bermuda Triangle between the Twin Cities and Des Moines?
Yes.
That one rest stop in Story City.
That one rest stop. I'm guessing there's a guy there that maybe hangs out. Maybe it's that 66-year-old woman that
the TSA stowaway.
When you stop to go into the restroom, she's got some sort of gadget. She says, watch this. This is going to be fun. And she just points at your car. The check engine light goes on. And a week later, she turns it off and says, well, that'll teach that guy.
Yeah. We hear so much about, all these, people that are monitoring our, our ATMs and all those things. Apparently, someone in Story City at the rest stop has got some high-end electronics.
Yeah. Evidently, that's the data hub of the universe. That's where the NSA and the FBI are keeping all of Hillary's emails and FBI's data texts and things like that. I recommend stopping by there.
Sure.
I would say stop by the Story City rest stop if your check engine light is on and see if it works for you.
and then report back in. Well, I did have a, to circle back to the beginning, the police in Sioux Falls last night had tweeted out that they were on search for the Vikings defense at the request of police in Minneapolis. And more than an hour later, they said the search was unsuccessful. So it could be that they ended up in Story City as well.
I just love it when states work together like that.
It is encouraging, isn't it? So.
It is encouraging. Yeah, it is. So here we are. We just got older, and we solved nothing.
Mm-hmm. But
you know, the years get shorter, and so I don't know if I've ever shared with you my tetherball theory of life as to why the years get shorter.
It goes around the pole, right? So, okay.
Right, and every trip around the pole, the rope gets just a little bit shorter, and the next trip around is just a little bit faster. Okay. So every year of your life is represented by a trip around that pole as that rope gets shorter and shorter until eventually the ball hits the pole, and that's usually the signals the end.
Okay. So. Well, I think I was mentioning I've been reading a book by Doug Grootheis, who's a philosophy professor at Denver SEM, and the line that caught my attention was, he's talking about the Psalm 90, verse 3, you know, that you turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you know, and he says, at some point, all of us lose our youth and sense the dustiness of ourselves. And I thought, oh, yeah, I'm kind of, so you wake up this morning and smell a little dust and go, yeah, that's
me.
Yeah, that's right. I can vacuum, but it may be something more. So, yeah. All right. So, but the good news is that Moses goes on to say, teach us to number our days, make the most of our time so that we can grow in wisdom. So that's hopefully what we'll do starting today. Anyway, Patrick, good to visit with you.
Good to visit with you, Neil.
Patrick Albanese from prestigious West Des Moines on the Early Morning Late Show, as always. And we've got more coming up here in the moments ahead. 28 past the hour. Flares. Know what it was? Not flowers. Flares. I'm with you. Okay. I was thinking about bars. You know, in the upper Midwest, we have bars. And there's, you know, with coffee. Today is National Blonde Brownie Day, often referred to as Blondies, because they use brown sugar instead of cocoa. So, first baked in Ohio in the 1940s. So,
I don't care what you call it. I call them delicious.
Sure.
And now I want one.
Have some bars. Anyway. That's where we are at this point in the morning. We'll get serious here in a couple of minutes. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about the battle over education for our children. Jim Garlow has a word on that. And Ruth Kramer joins us from Mission Network News in about 10. Stay tuned to the Early Morning Late Show. Well, maybe this is the year that you step out and do something new and maybe a little bit more challenging. We're talking the Live Free Challenge these days, because it's an initiative coming up here starting in February, and we're inviting you to join many others as we walk, run, and ride to raise money for the rescue and rehabilitation of trafficking victims, helping free children, women, and men from human trafficking as we partner with International Justice Mission. We've got details online, or you can go to livefreechallenge.org to sign up. And maybe the idea of doing something different, kind of a scary thought, even if it will lead to greater peace. Well, Owen Strand has more to say about that.
I think a lot of time we, just people, normal human people, but also Christians, live as though life is about self-preservation. It's about preserving the calm around you. You know, when you're meeting with your family members, for example, you steer clear of tough topics around the holiday table because you don't want things to get awkward. That sort of situation is what I have in mind. And here's the deal. Of course, we want to be courteous and gracious in our speech at all times. But we also have to recognize, for example, as Christians, we have the Great Commission. We're the only people in the world who have the gospel message to offer. God has given it to us. And his spirit is empowering us to share it with people. So be wise, you know, in conversation, be discerning, but also recognize you are called fundamentally as a believer to recognize that Jesus has overcome the world, John 16:33. So we don't need to fear the world. So we may feel awkward. Our cheeks may start to get red, you know, around the dinner table with embarrassment. But listen, it's time to tell people about Jesus. The moment is here. We may not have anything fancy to say. Our testimony may be pretty simple. Our presentation of the gospel may be fairly basic. God doesn't care. It's time for us to step out of the comfort zone and share Christ with the world. If we can get active in that kind of tough situation that by the way, hits every one of us, I think we're on our way to getting catalyzed for Jesus.
It's time to start telling someone about Jesus. That's a good word, isn't it? Pretty good challenge there from Owen Strand. You can find out more. That full conversation is available on the My Faith Radio website, myfaithradio.com. You can do a search for The Adventurous Life, Be of Good Cheer. Owen Strand is spelled S-T-R-A-C-H-A-N. It's a little different spelling, but check it out. Hear that conversation And you'll be encouraged and challenged here anew in this this new year, 2018. All right, Ruth Kramer coming up in just a minute on the Early Morning Light Show.
There's a battle going on over the education of our children with eternal consequences. This is Jim Garlow. In public school, your child will not be taught to pray. The Ten Commandments won't be on the classroom wall. Biblical principles will not be learned at school. The battle over the education and well-being of our children lies with us as parents. So what happens when they're ready to go off to college? Did you know 7 out of every 10 Christian students are leaving their faith as they move into college? What chance will they have in an ungodly university? It's essential they are grounded now in a biblical worldview as thoroughly and consistently as possible during the time you have them, and then send them to a Christian, truly Christian, university. The truth is, we're on the front line of the battle of thought, a war zone. Be well-versed. There are answers to your questions at jimgarlow.com.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
Here we are, 20 minutes before the hour. It's the Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold for another day, and we're looking forward to spending a little time talking about front lines of evangelism and mission work. Ruth Kramer is with Mission Network News and keeps us in tune with what God's doing around the globe. And Ruth, it's good to have you on again, and I know that we want to talk a little bit about the Open Doors USA World Watch List, which is a pretty sobering report. Just let's talk a bit about that.
Yeah, well, you know, again, this is a list that's a kind of a compilation of countries that have been studied over the last year to note where human rights and religious rights are being violated. You know, those countries that are listed on the top 50 of places where it is the hardest to be a follower of Christ also reveal countries that are vulnerable to unrest and destabilization as a society. So you're seeing a lot of things. If you were to look at the top 50, you'd see a lot of countries that we see in the headlines right now, because there's so many things going on with the insurgencies and things like that. No real big surprises, I would say that. You've got numbers, though, that break it down. One of every 12 Christians in the world lives in an area or in a culture where Christianity is either illegal, forbidden, or punished.
Wow.
This really defines what persecution is, where you can actually be put in jail. You can be charged. You can have the death penalty hanging over your head. You could, you know, easily see a lot of these different kinds of things happen. You risk getting attacked when you go to church. Those kinds of things are the daily reality for followers of Christ in these countries that are listed on the top 50 in the World Watch List. In the top 10, you've got 8 out of 10 that are really dealing with an insurgency of some kind, extremist ideology of some kind. Most of those 8 are going to be dealing with a Muslim insurgency. North Korea, obviously, being the one that has a different system, and Eritrea. But what we're looking at here with the extremism being the dominant issue is it's not always going to be the known systems like Boko Haram or Taliban or ISIS that are going to be the main driving force here. A lot of times it's community members, the community that surrounds the Christian and says, we reject what you're doing, we reject the thing you're saying, and we're going to take steps to try to make you stop it, or family members. So it's not always coming from the other organizations that we hear about. A lot of the times it's a community-oriented grassroots kind of a thing where they're trying to silence the person who's doing the gospel work on the ground.
We just we had a conversation just last week with someone who came to faith. His father was a prominent Muslim and disowned him. And I was interested to note that there's been kind of an uptick in that kind of, I guess, persecution, right? I mean, there's certainly still the extremism going on in terms of ISIS and whatnot, but family and communities, you say, that's becoming of there's greater pushback there.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's probably going to be a general trend, especially with the ideologies that continue to go nationalistic. You know, a lot of it is people feel like if you reject the state faith, like in Turkey, to be Turkish is to be Muslim, to be Muslim is to be Turkish. And in a lot of different countries where you have that standing ideology, it feels like that. So the families are going, why are you rejecting everything that makes you you? And it turns into a violent response quite often, actually. You know, in some of the countries that we were talking about and some of the stories that we were sharing the World Watch List about, we're kind of explaining the impact on this. We had a story out of Nepal. We had a story out of Egypt. We had a story out of Pakistan, because all of these countries have experienced, bottom line, across, you know, just really across the board, an uptick in the pressure against believers, against followers of Christ. One of the stories that we were asked to talk about involves Pakistan through our partner FMI. And we've been following the story in Pakistan because one of their influential gospel workers has been charged with blasphemy, and we've been following his trial. His name is Ahmed. And just because of that situation, we've been able to kind of narrow the focus on this is what it's like to be a gospel worker in the country of Pakistan in this day and age, where persecution across the board is on the rise. And, you know, the last thing we knew was that the judge actually recused himself from the case. There's a new judge sitting in place. And it's very likely that he's going to draw out the case as long as possible instead of making a decision. There's a couple of thoughts behind that strategy, is that they think that perhaps if they draw out the case, it could be a way of protecting Ahmed, because then there won't be a definitive way to use the verdict for or against him. It won't make him as much of a target, and it could prolong his life, actually. And the other part of it is the judge may actually be in the back pocket of the extremists that are driving the blasphemy case. So that's just kind of the reality of what faces people who are following Christ in Pakistan. You risk being charged with blasphemy, being accused of blasphemy, just because you aren't towing the line. In a lot of situations, this is just something where they're asking believers who are not experiencing these kinds of pressures to be praying with them, praying that their faith stays strong and that they maintain their focus in the relationship with Christ.
Find out more on that story and others at mnonline.org, Mission Network News. Ruth Kramer with MNN, with us today here as a regular Monday feature on the Early Morning Late Show. We'll talk more with Ruth in just a moment. Past the hour on the Early Morning Late Show, Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News on with us this morning. Been talking a little bit about the persecuted church around the world. And Ruth, one of the stories that you've highlighted, the story about a Christ follower in Egypt. And I guess I didn't realize this. Egypt is home to approximately half of all believers in the Middle East. That's a significant number. And there is a real ramp up of opposition there as well, too.
Yeah, well, ISIS has actually made its presence known in Egypt now, and there's been an ongoing Islamic insurgency up in the north. So you've had a lot of situations where the security issues for Coptic believers have been increasing, probably exponentially over the last 4 or 5 months. And in the last month of 2017, there were numerous attacks on bodies of Christ. In fact, there was an extremist attack at the end of December, during a church service where you had children who were rehearsing for a Christmas play, that there was an attack in the church there. And the casualties were more horrific because it was an attack on even more innocent people who were gathering together in worship. So this is just one of the situations. There was another attack at the beginning of the year, and the Islamic State has announced that they're intending to wipe out Egypt's Copts and the liberal Cairo. And so they're really looking to kind of return it to what they had hoped to have when the Muslim Brotherhood was in charge, and maybe make that a little bit more an Islamic state. So I think what we're looking at for Egypt as a trend is that it's going to get a little bit worse before it gets better. The government has been trying to step up security and trying to protect places where you have houses of worship, but they're obviously not going to be everywhere at all times. In the meantime, what you're hearing from Christians on the ground is they just feel the pressure. They feel the oppression as they move about in the community. Because they don't necessarily dress the same way. If their hair isn't covered a certain way or if they're out at a time like during Ramadan, they're risking attack. They're risking just the disapproval of what's going on in some of the more extremist areas. And we share the story of Sarah, who's an Egyptian ministry correspondent. And you just kind of read what she deals with on a regular basis and think, could I deal with that? They expect it. And they work around that, but they do often ask us when we're praying for them to be praying that they are creative in how they approach ministry, because it's going to get a lot tougher to do the things that they're doing right now.
Hi there, Ruth. This is Rebecca, and I want to throw you a curveball this morning. We had a listener call in with a question about Asia Bibi and wondering if they hadn't heard the latest on that. Of course, she has a pretty high-profile case in Pakistan under their blasphemy law, I believe. Have you heard anything recently or any good or positive news to report on her count?
That's actually kind of a situation where we ask about that, but because there's no movement in her case right now, it's just kind of gone dead. It's a hot potato kind of a situation where very few of the government officials that are dealing with it actually want to deal with it, because those kinds of cases get people killed. You had a governor who was speaking out on the release of, calling for the release of Asia Bibi and calling for the repeal of the blasphemy law, and his bodyguard assassinated him. You had other government officials who'd spoken out on behalf of Asia Bibi and who were, you know, considering entertaining the motion. I mean, they weren't even actually saying we are going to repeal the blasphemy law. They were just entertaining the idea of entertaining a motion, and they were attacked. So right now, the situation being what it is, that's a case where you just kind of want to let the furor kind of die down. And then maybe you can get something done when their attention is elsewhere. So Asia Bibi's case has not been really moving anywhere. We don't have any new updates other than the fact that she's still where she is.
Ruth, appreciate that update. We've got a couple minutes left. I know that one of the articles you write about relates to human trafficking. January is Human Trafficking Awareness Month. And yes, I was a little surprised to realize that extreme poverty can be a contributing factor in some of this. Say more about that.
Well, extreme poverty, you know, when people are trying to feed their children, they're trying to feed themselves, they're trying to survive, have a roof over their heads, pay for medicine or whatever it is, and there's no way that they can earn money, especially women who are single moms. They'll do what they need to do to take care of that. And a lot of times that means they go into the sex trade in order to earn enough money to, you know, take care of putting food on the table and having a roof over their heads and taking care of the medicine. You have human trafficking that is also forced labor. And again, the most poverty-stricken families, when they have a lot of children, they're not really keeping close watch over those children because they have to feed them and take care of them. So when somebody goes missing, it's sort of a relief on the family burden, and they don't really necessarily look to recover that child. And sometimes they actually sell their children into forced labor because they're either promised that the child will send wages home, or they look for it as a way to not have to feed so many mouths at home. So human trafficking plagues every country, and it's everywhere. It's not just in the places that we know about, but ministries that we talk to that, you know, share these things kind of give us a picture of what it's like. So poverty plays an extreme role in making people vulnerable towards being put into either forced labor or the sex trade. And you know, with Food for the Hungry is a ministry that we talked to for that article that you're referencing. They specifically work in places that are known for high human trafficking activities. So India, Bangladesh, Cambodia, and the Philippines, all of those areas have a lot of that extreme poverty. You have a refugee population, you have a caste system. And so there are a lot of people who are looking for ways to just kind of survive, and they turn to human trafficking, or they're victimized by it because of that. So Food for the Hungry comes in on the other side and tries to get in front of the problem before it becomes a problem. So you're talking about providing safe houses to help women get out of trafficking, to help them look with at vocational training, getting an education so that they can find their way out of being that vulnerable, out of being that desperate. And it gives them hope for something else. There are a lot of other kinds of ways that ministries like Food for the Hungry work to get in front of the problem of human trafficking before it becomes a problem. And one of those ways is, as they do these kinds of things to help with the human plight, they deal with the heart issues as well. And so when you see that happen, and all of a sudden these people have a community because of the body of Christ, they are so much less vulnerable to being trafficked.
I always love the reports that, God's truth, God's love, breaking patterns of cruelty and criminality and all those things, and Food for the Hungry, just one of those that are doing that. Ruth Kramer giving us an update today on God at Work around the world. Ruth's from Mission Network News. You can check out their stories online, mnnonline.org, mnnonline.org. Ruth, always good to talk with you. Have a great Monday.
Thanks for having us on. Have a good day.
You're listening to the Early Morning Late Show. We'll wrap up Hour 1 here in just a moment. Thanks for tuning in this morning. The Early Morning Late Show. I'm Neil Stavem, sitting in for Bill Arnold here on this Monday, January 22. Coming up next hour, we're going to work through it. Rebecca, I'm not really ready to, but we're going to talk about using the platform of sports to talk about faith. And it takes a lot of faith to be positive today after the Vikings.
I think
lost.
So, but all right. In all situations too. I mean, you can have a testimony in a win when everybody's cheering, but yeah. What is your testimony after a loss or disappointment?
We'll talk with a representative of the FCA, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, coming up next hour, as well as Dr. Richard Land making a regular appearance. By the way, in case you went to bed early like I did, the Vikings lost 38-7. Patriots won 24-20. So it's the Eagles and the Patriots in the Super Bowl coming up in a couple of weeks.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.